You're at 109 right now.
Let's talk about the genius of Donald Glover. For starters, as soon as I tried to make this statement, as soon as I said a memory flashed in my mind. Okay, so let me explain this, how I'm introducing. let me explain what's happening in my mind right now. Number one, I intended to begin this podcast just as I started by introducing our topic, our theme, Donald Glover. We're going to talk about Donald Glover. And just as I started to say I was, the full sentence I was going to say was, I learned about Donald Glover in 2012 when I listened to Childish Gambino's album and stuff, so forth and so on. That's what I was going to say. And just as I began to say, I learned about Childish Gambino in 2012, the memories of Donald Glover and his participation in a comedy trio, a comedy troupe, on YouTube, on the channel College Humor. I can't remember the name of the trio, but there were two white guys and Donald Glover. And they had some bizarre comedy sketches, some really wild things going on there. But that was my introduction to Donald Glover. It was the work that he was doing with that comedy trio. So that was around 2008 when I first learned about him. I remember I was in South Korea and I would go online and search for entertaining videos to watch, and I found Donald Glover and the comment and the College Humor. Did I say comedy humor? I meant College Humor. College Humor. That's what that was. That was a College Humor channel. And so that was 2008, around that time, when I learned about Donald Glover. Years later, I guess I found his music. Let me see. So more memories are coming to my mind. So there was College Humor, but then there was he was on the show Community. And of course I knew Community because of Chevy Chase. Chevy Chase is a big name in comedy from he's an alumni of Saturday Night Live. So so because Donald Glover, the kid from College Humor, was working with Chevy Chase, then it was like, oh, okay, he's doing bigger things now. Look at who he's working with alongside, whatever. I mean, the rest of the cast might have their own credentials and what have you, but I'm still not familiar with most of those people. But Donald Glover, yeah, absolutely. All right. So after Community, then I became aware of him through probably some other projects that he's done, but they don't come to mind. I can't think of them right now. So it was College Humor, and then Community, and then I guess it was his music. So Community, even though I didn't watch Community, I've watched several episodes here and there, and I mean, he was the star, you know, of Community. I think after Community, then he started Atlanta. I think then he went into his own direction, and he was like, I'm going to dibble and dabble in these things. I think Atlanta was after Community. But even between Atlanta and Community, he was releasing music. Well, I mean, he was also doing stand-up comedy, but I mean, I wasn't aware of all the things that he was doing. But the College Humor was one thing I was aware of. That was my introduction to Donald Glover. Then it became, he was working on Community. And then after that, I guess it was his music. So between 2008, when I learned about him, to 2012, when I listened to his first record, 2012, 2011, some about that time, that's when I was tapped in with him. And so the first record I listened to, of course, was Camp, his first record, right? So Camp was, man, that was such an amazing record, because there I was in South Korea. I was in South Korea. I was a university instructor. I was one of the three black staff members, right? So there were about 50. I think there were about between 40 or 50 teachers. Let me see, like 15, at least 15 people in that room. Another 6, that's 21. And then 20, maybe 6. Maybe there were about 30. Probably 30 teachers. Could have been 5, that's 5, 10, 15, 20. 26, 30, yes, something, anyhow, you know, about 30 teachers, and three of them are black, people of color. Yes, there was an Asian woman who could have identified as a person of color, but I didn't get those vibes from her. She was cool, very cool. I'm still friends with her on Facebook and all. I see her updates, and they're very chill, very cool. The others, the white folk, they tried to be chill, tried to be cool, but I didn't have the, I wasn't rubbing elbows with them all the time, and just didn't feel very, didn't feel so comfortable around them, especially noticeably the Koreans, you know, had a preference, you know. And so anytime a decision would be made, then it would be, okay, you can come along. You have to follow along, rather than, you know, you're going to lead. You know, it's more so, oh, yeah, you're the afterthought. That's what I'm trying to say. I think that's what it was. That's how I felt being around my white colleagues, you know. So maybe that's because of my... my lack of assertiveness. Maybe that's my personality. Maybe I'm just, you know, maybe I'm imagining things. But when I was around my white colleagues in Korea, it wasn't, it was like, So anyhow, there I was. I was one of the 30 some odd people at this university. And as far as my perspective, my position and my place, I think it was very much determined by my education, because that's why I was there, because I was educated, I was qualified to be there. But then there were also things like, when I was at the school, they put on a show, they put on a play. What is it? 10 or 12 little monkeys, you know, one little monkey jumping on the bed, one monkey fell off, hit his head, then 9 monkeys, you know, you go from, you know, you're counting as a little nursery rhyme or something. That nursery rhyme comes from a play, I believe. And it has a long history. And that play actually, the title, the original title of that play is not 10 Little Monkeys or 12 Little Monkeys or whatever. It's 10 Little Niggas. 10 Little Niggers. Okay? And in Korea, because Koreans don't have a knowledge of history. They don't have perspective on race relations the way that we do in America. They don't have that black, white, racist, racial history, that dynamic. They have colorism, but they don't have the black, white dynamic. So when they put the play on at the university, and it was agreed upon, or it was allowed by one of the professors who was a white man, who was who agreed, you know, with it. They put the title, they used the original title. A white professor agreed to it and said, yeah, sure, go ahead and do that. Like, why not check? Why do it? That word is offensive. So on their flyers, wait a minute. No, that can't be right. The way that I remember this, that can't be right. They didn't put 10 little niggers on their flyer to promote this. They didn't do that. No, it was. Well, why do I remember it as I remember that controversy. It was quite a controversial thing. I was in Korea and they ran a play. They ran a production of a play that the original title of the play is 10 Little Niggers. And I caught wind of it. I got wind of it somehow. How did I catch wind of it? Was it because the playbill had on it the name 10 Little Niggers or something? I don't know. I remember that distinctly. But that just goes to show, you know, how, you know, clueless the Koreans are. Anywho, what I'm saying is I was in a rough place because no one understood from my perspective. No one was like, hey, we shouldn't do this because black people would be offended. Hey, there's a black American here. He finds this offensive. Maybe we should change it. You know, what about the black American perspective? It wasn't represented, and I didn't feel like being the sole black person protesting, you know, this detail. But there I was. And so I felt oftentimes misunderstood, I suppose, and alone. However, when I picked up that Donald Glover tape, that CD, and I downloaded it and I listened to it, there were mentions of Donald Glover's loneliness, isolation, alienation, you know, and frustration and angst and all of these emotions. I could relate to them in his music. And I thought, man, dude. I thought, man, he makes some damn good music. I could relate to it. He was talking about growing up with his family, just being a lone black kid who was into certain things. Just being that black kid who didn't do, you know, black stuff, quote unquote black stuff, really. I could relate to that. You know, but there were other aspects of his music that I couldn't relate to, but they still resonated with me because on a human level it was like, how would anyone, you know, endure that situation? I'll give you an example. When he mentions, he says that his mom was working at a fast food restaurant. I don't know if this is true or if it's just a story that he tells. I think it's just a story because I don't think his mom ever worked at a fast food. Well, I don't know her life stories. I don't know. But he says that his mother was working at a fast food restaurant establishment, and someone pulled a gun on her, and she had to just continue to work. So even though there was a traumatic event at her job, she still had to go to work. She still had to endure. And I thought, damn, that's a cold reality. You know, can you imagine working at a gas station? Someone comes in and robs you. You survive. And you just have to brush it off and chalk it up to, hey, it is what it is. And you never know if the next night, if there's someone else is going to come in to rob you or what have you. It's like, oh, man, this is terrible. Excuse me. That's sort of a black thing I've noticed, like that nostril, scratching of the nostril. I would do that when I was growing up. I did that more often than I do these days. I notice I do that now only when I think when the weather is changing mostly. But I did that a lot when I was growing up, and I think it's because of the dust in my room. So it's due to allergies, dust allergies. And when I moved to South Korea, I didn't experience that. It stopped completely. I never did the which is such a black thing. Watch. What was that? Oh, Dion Cole did that in You People. That was the most relatable That was such a subtle, relatable thing. Like, oh my gosh, that black thing that we do. Oh man. And I just did it. Okay. But yeah, like I said, when I was in South Korea, that didn't happen. It stopped. I think the air, my living space. Maybe it was just what happened in Los Angeles is where I lived, I hadn't dusted. I lived in a very dusty room, in a very dusty household, and so the dust got to me. But when I was in Korea, in Korea I was moving. I moved from apartment to apartment, so I always moved in a different, I don't know, or maybe I didn't stay very long in my home. You know, because I could recall like being, when I lived at home, I was a homebody, so I would stay home on weekends and stuff. But when I got to Korea, then on weekends, I would be out and about. I don't know how to explain it. But back to Childish Gambino, Donald Glover, and his music, I could relate to it on so many levels, and I could appreciate it for how masterful, his expression was of life. Of innocence, and the final story, the final song on his album, on that first album, Camp, is a wonderfully told, it's a graphic novel, graphic in the sense that you can see it, it's eloquent, but not graphic in the sense that, oh, that's horrific, terrible, no, graphic. You can see it so well, so well painted. And it's not even, he's not even rapping. He's just basically telling the story with a beautiful instrumental, in the background. And that is just masterful. And it's like, that's what makes him, that's what sets him apart because from the others. Because for the story that he's telling, he's doing it so well. That he's calling into this musical, this music genre. He's calling into it literature. He's bringing in, a story that he's telling, over this instrumental. So that was beautiful. So anyway, I loved Camp, and Camp was fire, as they say, as the youngsters say. That was a hot one. And then from there, I was hooked on Donald Glover's music. because it was such, it was different. The songs are different. The beats are different. Not what I'm used to. But for the stories, and for the content, you know, for his character, for his personality, to shine through that music, that's really what I listened for. And that's what I really appreciate about that album. Not so much the music, the beats, because, you know, if the beats were knocking, were West Coast beats, I might play more Childish Gambino. Maybe not. There's too much music out there anyway, you know, and I guess I just, he got lost in the shuffle. That would explain why I haven't listened to him recently. But I'm talking about Childish Gambino because I saw his video, Littlefoot Bigfoot, and that's what I really wanted to talk about. I got sidetracked or went on a tangent about South Korea, but it's all relevant to the experience, to the expression, you know, and to how, you know, I had to explain that to explain how I relate to his music, Donald Glover's music. All right, so the next thing that I wanted to say is, I watched Atlanta. I watched episodes of Atlanta. The craziest episode has to be the episode with, wait a minute, there's so many crazy episodes. My goodness. Crazy episodes from Atlanta, memorable ones. Oh, wait, it was only one episode, but they had many sections. It was that one episode with, what's it called? So Paperboy is being interviewed Paperboy was interviewed alongside the trans person. That episode where they cut away, it was Montague, right? It was like a Montel Williams, Donahue, you know, format. And then the commercials, the Dodge commercials in between. Oh my gosh. What the hell was that all about? The dude drove around the city and he wasn't wearing pants. And everyone was like, hey, that's a nice car. Everybody was saying, that's a nice car. That's a nice car. This dude didn't have it together. Didn't have it together at all. Like, wow. That part, man. That part. So, man. And then the 30-year-old black dude who identifies as white, he says, no wonder I don't get respect. I'm a 35-year-old white man, you know, going through a trans surgery. Oh, my gosh, that was just bizarre type of craziness and just true. It's just true. It's like that's what race is. Like, oh, you're in a society and you're not getting respected. You know, your pants aren't hanging off of your butt. You're not doing the cultural things that you think, you know, identifies you. And it's, why is that? Because I identify as something else. I identify as those white people over there. Hey, what kind of IPA do you have on tap? What the fuck? I call the cops on that guy, you know, like, you're doing white people stuff, man. That's because I identify as being white. That's crazy. All right. So anyhow, what a bizarre ride it was to watch that episode. Just like, oh my gosh. All right. But then Cat Williams is on that episode, the Alligator Man. That was beautiful. And then the final scene to see the Alligator Man running down the street. Oh, man, that was beautiful. Beautifully played by Cat Williams. He got the Emmy for that one, right? Cat Williams, genius. Boy, oh boy. So what else do we have there? We've got... we got... So we had episodes of Atlanta to watch. We had music from Childish Gambino. He borrows a lot from other songs, you know. He's not so much. The one thing about Childish Gambino, he's not so creative. I mean, his comedy is extremely creative, but the music, he borrows from other artists. He's not creative in the way that Prince was creative. You know, Prince could do everything, and he did it well. I think, I'm guessing Childish Gambino relies upon others. He might have ideas and might be capable of rapping and even, you know, I want to say singing, but his singing isn't that great. Like, he could rap, and then he's got a mind for these different things. Like, he's a creative person who can put things together, who can produce, maybe. I don't know. I wonder, is Childish Gambino like Drake? Is he a product? You know, what things actually come from the mind of Donald Glover? So anyhow, so we got a lot of music from him. All right. So now we've got this Littlefoot Bigfoot video. And the most striking moment occurs when, during the performance, a man shoots himself. And the interesting thing about him shooting himself is that initially the man seems to be irritated, annoyed with the performance, with Donald Glover's performance. And so the man stands up in protest, takes out a gun that he seems to want to use to harm Donald Glover. He wants to stop him from performing this song he doesn't like. And so the man stands up from his seat in the audience and walks toward Donald Glover, who, I guess, inadvertently, while dancing, probably waved his hand in the man's direction. But because he was standing, you know, he inadvertently hits the man or something. There's some interaction that occurs between Donald Glover and this man with this gun. And it's not so much that Donald Glover was trying to defend himself or noticed the gun. It was inadvertent, but there was contact made between these two. And and the result is the man inadvertently shoots himself and dies during Donald Glover's performance. And it's a very awkward moment. Indeed, until the awkwardness, the silence is broken when a member of the audience begins to laugh at what just occurred, what they just witnessed. He laughs. And as he's laughing, he says something like, "Ooh, you messed up," or something like that. "Ooh, wee, wow," you know, and just laughs. And then that causes other members of the audience to laugh at this man's death, this error, this mistake. This man dies. He said, "Ooh, look at that, wow." You see that? Okay, so the thing I'll say about that is, like, what kind of commentary is that? It seems, how did they weave that? How did they bring that in there? You know, bringing tragedy into a Donald Glover music video seems like, it seems necessary. Like a good Shakespearean tragedy, there's always a bloodbath. There's always this, yeah, there's always a tragedy. So in a Donald Glover work, there's always a tragedy. There's always something, you know, that's going to happen, that's going to shake you, you know. And it's placed perfectly in the performance, because it's at a moment where there's a high crescendo, right? There's a lot of intensity, and then it happens. So, yeah, so we got all that. It's brilliant. It's brilliantly weaved in to the song and the video. But what is it? Is it commentary on our society? Is he saying that if you're a hater, if you hate me, if you're a hater, you're going to get something. It's something bad is going to happen to you. Is he commenting on being a hater? Don't be a hater. Is that what he's saying? Look, the man who hated the performance ends up shooting himself in, don't put that negative energy out there. It's only going to come back to you, sort of, so to speak, a karmic. Is that a karmic statement? Is he talking about karma? Then, or is it a statement about us, about our society? Like, the man laughs. The man laughs when tragedy strikes. Is that to say that we're so, desensitized to tragedy that, you know, these things will make you laugh? I remember so many years ago, 1997 maybe, around the time that Schindler's List was released, there was a news story about a group of students who went to the movies to watch Schindler's List. It was supposed to be a educational experience for them, and yet when they watched the movie, when someone was murdered in a scene, the kids laughed, and the kids were saying it's the way that the person fell, it's the way that the murder was depicted that was funny. And because the students believed they were just watching a movie, they just took it as, hey, that was funny, rather than, oh my gosh, that might have really happened. We're watching real events, you know, that sort of thing. And so at that time, it was a matter of, well, these kids are too desensitized. They're watching violence on video games and other videos. And when they see a serious movie, they don't even take it seriously, that kind of thing. So is that where we are as a society? Are we desensitized to the violence? Or does it say that the only way to cope through tragedy is to laugh, or to find something funny about it, to find the humor in the tragedy? And then you have the big dude. Then you have the unexpected feature from a rap artist, and the guy is a giant, is depicted as a giant, and that the fact that the black man, the rapper, is a giant, that harkens back to Boots Riley's I'm a Virgo, where the story is about a black boy who is a giant, a literal giant. You know, and Boots Riley's work is commentary on the diminishing elements of our society that are placed on the black man, the black body, so that, you know, we in society are made to feel small, but in reality, the truth of who we are in society is very grand, is very big. So in a very literal sense, instead of imagining our power and our strength, physically Boots Riley made this one kid a giant. And then there is the same concept with Donald Glover, with this rapper, you know, this feature. So, you know, again, that's what I'm getting at. Like, is Donald Glover like just borrowing these ideals, or is this an amalgamation of ideals from other places, from other artists, you know, working to bring forth the best Donald Glover project? Because I heard a song. No. Let's go back to that other album, that blue album that Donald Glover has. There's like a Rick James song, very famous. What, I don't think it was Mary Jane, but he borrowed the lyrics, the cadence. No, it wasn't that. It was a was it not Sly in the Phone or Bootsy Collins? It was Bootsy Collins. Something like that, right? Daylight. Something, whatever that one is. Yeah, so he took that. Like, how do you, like, that's not even sample. I mean, that not only sampling, that's like interpolating the whole song, switching it up. But where's the creativity? That's not an original work. That's a version of a Bootsy Collins song. That's what I'm saying. And then this new record has more of that. I heard him take the lyrics from Jeanne. Hey, Mr. DJ, you playing our song. All right. Something, Jeanne, that group, Jeanne, the two women with bald heads, one light skin, one dark skin. I don't think it was Hey, Mr. DJ. It was Everybody. Oh, okay, I forgot the song. But Donald Glover sings it. Childish Gambino sings it. I'm like, yo, he's borrowing from there. He's borrowing from here. He's borrowing from there. He's like, where's the originality? It doesn't detract from what he's doing, from the product that he's creating. It's more so like DJ Khaled. It's like, what are you buying when you buy a DJ Khaled record? You're buying a new product that has borrowed from so many other products. Like, where is the originality? Where is he writing? Is he creating? What? He's just repackaging and bringing it back out and putting it back in, giving it back to you. Like, what? But the original artist, the original artist did it well. Did it so well that there's no reason to even change it. So I think Donald Glover is a comedic genius, and his musical genius is apparent too. But maybe it isn't apparent. The music genius. The music is good, but it's not apparent. And then the his videos, everything that he produces, yeah, it's thought provoking, it's visually stimulating, and he's one heck of a entertainer, and he's an awesome cat. But I guess I just wonder what role he plays in bringing these things to life, you know. Because there's some damn good ideas. There's some really brilliant stuff. I can see Dave Chappelle, you know, writing his jokes. Dave Chappelle clearly is a writer. He writes his jokes. He writes his stand-up comedy. And that's what you get, stand-up comedy from him. Now, when you watch him on his shows, you know, bringing forth, comedy sketches, that's a collaborative effort. He had he worked with Neil Brennan, I think is his name. So it was a collaborative effort. It wasn't just Dave sitting down and saying, all right, this is what I'm going to do. And let me write this up. And then that's what we're going to do. That's what I'm going to do next. This is how it's going to play out. Nah, he bounced ideas off of Neil. So who is Donald Glover bouncing his ideas off of? Is it does he have a partner, or is it a group? Is it a group helping him bring these ideals to fruition? and he is the face of this creative conglomerate. The world may never know. Oh no. Amanda Seales is certainly productive. Not as productive as Donald Glover. I mean, excuse me, Donald Glover doesn't seem to be as productive as Amanda Seales. Amanda Seales is producing stuff. She's got a podcast. I remember a day or two ago, I looked at my podcast and I looked at Amanda Seales' podcast. I released an episode of the podcast like 18 hours from the time that I was checking my podcast, and Amanda Seales had released the podcast within 1 hour of that time that I was checking the podcast. So she's producing, she's working, you know, constantly creating content and stuff like that. So where's Childish Gambino? What's he doing? I don't know. But we've got some new stuff coming from him, and I think it's pleasing. It's pleasing. But we also have to be very cautious about what he's producing, because it's like, hey, man, what you doing with us? You showing us the work of a group of people and passing it off as your own? Isn't that what Drake does? Kung Fu Kenny! Peace. Peace and blessing.
You're at 109 right now.